From wars to censorship to cultural issues, you're with Mark Morano and Unleashed on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. You have been warned repeatedly, over and over. I guess that's the same thing. The Biden administration is now openly talking once again for the third time of his administration, leaking this to the mainstream media, of declaring a national climate emergency. They mean it. I don't know if it's going to happen. This is the way they work. They floated it. They floated it to the Associated Press, the Washington Post, a year, 2 years ago, 1 year ago, and now again, this time to Bloomberg News. And what the Biden administration is saying is sort of to affect his lame duck status and make him a muscular president 6 months before the 2024 elections. Joe Biden will declare a national climate emergency for which he could then bypass democracy and have dictatorial control over American energy, climate policy, and look like a man of action. Remember, President Obama changed the name from executive order to executive action. I'm a man of action. And this is pretty significant if it were to happen, not only for the precedent to have a climate emergency declaration, but also for the powers that it would give the presidency by which to bypass traditional democracy. I was asked to go on Fox News, and here I am. This is on The Bottom Line on Fox News, clip three, explaining exactly what a Biden national climate emergency would look like. Roll tape, clip three.
In the White House telling Fox Business it's now considering declaring a national climate emergency. But that's a climate crisis to you, Mark. The AP, which sets the standards for newsrooms across the country, they're urging Americans to use the term climate crisis to address the current situation. This is all troubling, but if the president declares a climate emergency, what impact does that have?
Well, I mean, this is the serious story of the today. NBC News has reported that if Joe Biden declares a national climate emergency, he would have COVID-like powers under that emergency, and they also compared the emergency powers to the 9/11 emergency powers. The Center for Biological Diversity has estimated Joe Biden would get about 130 wartime-like powers by which to bypass democracy and impose the Green New Deal on America without a single vote of Congress. This is truly this should be a Halloween story, not a story for Earth Day. This is a truly frightening story, and he might just be desperate enough to do it. This is being widely reported in the media. The Biden White House is leaking this out. This might happen, and this is going to give Joe Biden these kind of, you want to say the word, dictatorial powers. He doesn't need no stinking democracy to impose the Green New Deal if he does this.
Well, they drained 260 million barrels from their strategic petroleum reserve to keep gas prices down ahead of the midterms, haven't been able to refill it. What are they going to do? Let Iran pump more oil. Mark Morano, thank you so much.
Yes, everything I said, I'm about to go through and break it down, but I actually have the NBC News clip, the aforementioned that I mentioned. But first, I just wanted to give you the actual lowdown. And this is from Bloomberg News. And they leaked this story out on Friday afternoon. White House renews internal talks on invoking climate emergency. And they're saying it could be used to halt exports, to halt drilling. And it would trigger the ability for him to deploy about 130 new powers. And that, of course, is from the Center for Biological Diversity, as I mentioned. You were warned about the 9/11 COVID-like powers, emergency powers that they want to have with these climate powers. Now, we already have cities in Colorado, California, banning gas station, new gas station. You can't build new gas stations. So they're putting a rationing on the supply of gas stations. You already have countries like France banning short flights of less than 2.5 hours to save the planet on climate change. You already have the electric car mandates and the gas-powered car bans. You already have massive energy restrictions. What this does in the United States will give President Joe Biden wartime powers by which to invoke it. Don't believe me? Let's see what NBC News had to say about this very topic 1 year ago. NBC News, clip 4 on Joe Biden declaring a national climate emergency and all the special powers, spowers and abilities beyond those mortal men. And who disguised as Joe Biden, president of the United States? Clip 4, NBC News will explain.
Record heat and pounding rain down south, mudslides out west, wildfires coast to coast. President Biden, in the face of these disasters, now facing new pressure to declare climate change a national emergency. It's something Democrats have been hoping for a while, even before Congress passed that sweeping climate law last year.
We are in an emergency, and it is a worldwide emergency.
It didn't happen then, but activists hope it will now.
President Biden, we need your help.
Declare a climate emergency.
So what would that even do? Declaring an emergency can unlock special powers for a president in a crisis without needing approval from Congress, thanks to a law passed nearly 50 years ago. Since then, every president has declared at least one emergency during their time in office. Former President Trump, for example, signing one in the pandemic. Former President George W. Bush declaring one after 9/11. Now, 57% of voters support the naming of a new national emergency on climate if Congress doesn't do more, according to recent polling. If President Biden were to do that, it could mean new incentives, for example, to cut greenhouse gas emissions, speed up EV production, and build more renewable energy centers.
Are you prepared to declare a national emergency with respect to climate change?
We've already done that. We're moving. It is the existential threat to humanity.
So you've already declared that national emergency?
Practically speaking, yes.
Yeah.
But practically speaking is different from actually declaring it. And if he did, Republicans would probably sue, meaning the whole thing could land at the steps of the Supreme Court.
There's so much to unpack in that NBC News report. First of all, direct comparison to George W. Bush declaring 9/11, the national security terrorism alert, which we're still living under today, which gave the United States, laid the groundwork for our surveillance state, laid the groundwork for the Department of Homeland Security, laid the groundwork for the Patriot Act, laid the groundwork for domestic surveillance of our citizens, laid the groundwork to declare American citizens domestic terrorists, like the Biden administration Justice Department was labeling angry parents at school board meetings, angry about critical race theory being shoved down their kids' throats and transgender ideology and the COVID theater and the masking and the social distancing. This is truly frightening. And the other analogy NBC News just reported was Donald Trump making COVID a national emergency. And I've already repeated the combination of Donald Trump making COVID a national viral emergency and his acquiescence to 10 days to flatten the curve and being duped by Fauci and Deborah Birx, the White House COVID coordinator, was the single greatest blunder of any president of the last 50 years. And I defy you to come up with a greater one. It literally tanked his presidency. It made every governor had cover now of the conservative Republican White House to literally become dictators overnight. The most consequential decisions of your life, whether you could leave your house, whether your children could go to school, whether your church was open, whether you could go to the grocery store, whether you had to force muzzle yourself, vaccine mandates, everything eventually flowed from that. She ends with what I would call a note of optimism. It'll be immediately sued, end up in the Supreme Court. But remember, during COVID, under these national emergencies, the most insane, I want to curse, I won't, absolute crap happened. You had the Centers for Disease Control telling landlords they couldn't evict tenants, not even in their purview, completely unconstitutional and absurd. You had the CDC issuing travel mandates like mask mandates on planes, trains, automobiles, completely outside of their authority. It took almost 2 years for one Trump-appointed federal judge to reverse it. So whatever damage Joe Biden could get done could take years to even stop, let alone begin reversing. And if he wins re-election and he's still under a climate emergency, all bets are off in November. He's going to have that power. He's probably going to declare it either. If he doesn't declare it now and he wins the election, they're ready. They've been pushing this, everyone from Chuck Schumer to AOC to the Weather Channel freaking meteorologist. That was the clip NBC News showed. So the other thing I wanted to comment on was NBC News claiming about the polling data. 57% of Americans want Joe Biden to declare an emergency because Congress isn't doing enough. We've got to have Congress legislate the climate. Darn it, those storms, which aren't getting worse, but the Congress has to rein in those hurricanes and tornadoes. And if they don't, why, Joe Biden will have to do it himself. Powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. And who disguise? What is he? This is insane. All right. I don't know. I don't know what else to tell you. It just goes on and on. You thought COVID lockdowns were bad. Wait for climate lockdowns. We've had guests on this last week. Rupert Darwal talking about the UK fires report 2019, which laid out literally what looked like a COVID lockdown, but it was in the name of climate. They didn't use the phrase lockdown. Banning of airports, limiting meat consumption by 80%. Radical freedom of movement restrictions, radical energy movement, radical agriculture. I mean, they are ready. All they want is to get us. And by us, I mean we the people, we the democracy, our elected leaders, because there's no way Congress is voting to ban gas-powered cars. There's no way Congress is voting for agricultural restrictions. But hey, during an emergency, don't you know it's a crisis? We can do whatever the hell we want because it's an emergency. Throughout history, the ruling class, governing elite, have tried to come up with reasons why the rest of us cannot be free. And what better way than crises and emergencies, climate, terrorism, war, viruses. This is where the greatest loss of liberty and freedom of people come is during these times of declared emergencies. So says the BBC, by the way. It's all in my book, The Great Reset, Global Elites and the Permanent Lockdown. That's what the basis of my book is about, bypassing democracy, these emergency powers. And I have a whole chapter just warning specifically about what a climate emergency declaration would look like. Okay, on Fox, I also talked about Joe Biden empowering China. This is going to be, hold on one second, I got this wrong. This is going to be on Biden's new energy restrictions. He went after, going after more domestic shutdowns. And are you ready for this? Shutting down U.S. copper mining, but we'll get to that. This is clip one, me on Fox, explaining what Biden's up to energy-wise.
Biden and company now unveiling new plans to block oil and gas drilling across millions of acres of the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska.
The president's Earth Day proclamation, Biden declared, quote, "This work has never been more urgent. Climate change is the existential crisis of our time. No one can deny its impact and staggering costs anymore."
Oh. To which Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski responded on X saying, quote, "The Biden administration may be focused on short-term political gains, but at the expense of Alaska's long-term future, limiting jobs for Alaskans, revenues for our state, and the future energy and mineral security of our nation."
Here now with reaction, ClimateDepot.com executive editor Mark Morano. Mark, good to see you. So as we talk about Joe Biden taking millions of acres out of exploration in Alaska, I want to draw your attention back to what KJP said, which he said that the administration is committed to maintaining a stable and secure energy supply and lowering the prices of Americans. That's a bold-faced, flat-out lie.
It's an absolute lie. They are doing everything possible to make our country more expensive to live in, to disrupt supply chain, to create inflation, to harm economic growth, and to impact our national security. In addition to just the obvious oil gas drilling, this affects a copper mine access road that would have helped us directly compete with China, which has record copper production now, top three country in the world with their copper mining. The Republic of Congo is number four, which China largely dominates. And the Biden administration is going after the rare earth mining, oil, gas. At the same time, they're claiming it's all for the climate. The climate's not going to notice one bit, but this is going to hammer Americans. I can't imagine, other than cheap politics for their environmental base, why they thought this was a good idea 6 months before a presidential election.
Well, just a few weeks ago, the Biden administration barred new drilling and mining in Colorado's Thompson Divide for 20 years. But this is the what makes it this much more grotesque, what Biden and company are doing. So they're on this climate crusade, but they have allowed Iran to export more oil than that nation has, that terror nation, in at least 6 years.
And that sort of lays it out. Copper mining. Restrictions now on access roads that'll kill a copper mine in Alaska. China, number three in the world in copper production, just hit record copper production levels in 2023. And number four, a close four, is the Democrat Republic of Congo, where, yes, all those underage children, you've seen the videos in flip-flops and sandals, in the most depraved human rights conditions of any mine probably in the world, are making your EV batteries and your solar panels and your wind and your cell phone and all that wonderful things that we're not allowed to mine for here in the United States because we have to meet our carbon footprint. Wow. Just wow, wow, wow. All right. This is part two on how this empowers China and how Donald Trump's 2012 tweet was correct about global warming created to benefit China. Clip two.
But they're going to crack down on energy production here in the United States. Do these dumbasses know that an oil derrick here is the same as an oil derrick over there when it comes to emissions and the climate, because it's called global warming, not national warming, you ding-dongs.
Well, it's even worse than that, because if we're outsourcing now to these other nations in the Middle East or Venezuela, as the Biden administration's begged them for more oil, and whether it's the mining from China, they have lower environmental standards, lower human rights standards. So it's actually not only are we outsourcing our emissions so we can virtue signal and say we meet our climate goals, instead, we're actually raising global emissions much higher than they would have been had we done it here in the United States. It takes 500,000 pounds of materials to make one EV, 1,000-pound EV battery. By shutting this oil, this exploration down of copper in Alaska, we just made that a lot more expensive and much more reliance on China. Donald Trump's 2012 tweet about climate change benefiting China comes true every single day.
And there you have it. This is truly insane. Now, I'd like to see the Trump campaign respond. I also, tomorrow, I'll probably go into it, maybe the next hour. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is coming on strong on energy and climate policy, my biggest objections to supporting him or voting for him. He gets it. He's now, you know, he sounds like me on Fox News. I'll try to get to that at the top of the next hour, go through some of his quotes. Again, I don't know that I trust him on these issues because of his long, long standing, but all of his environmental allies have turned against him. Fascinating read, and I'll get to that here later. Okay, we're going to go to the next clip. Is Carl Sagan. This is phenomenal. This is right before he died of cancer, I believe 1996. He was on Charlie Rose. This would be PBS. He gave a dire warning about the U.S. future of science and technology, and this they call it the last interview before his death. I can't verify that, but he certainly looks like he's a little sick in it. This is clip five, Carl Sagan warning about the scientific dystopia that we're in right now.
My feeling, Charlie, is that it's not that pseudoscience and superstition and New Age so-called beliefs and fundamentalist zealotry are something new. They've been with us for as long as we've been human. But we live in an age based on science and technology with formidable technological powers.
Science and technology are propelling us forward at accelerating rates.
That's right. And if we don't understand it, by we I mean the general public, if it's something that, oh, I'm not good at that, I don't know anything about it, then who is making all the decisions about science and technology that are going to determine what kind of future our children live in? Just some members of Congress? But there's no more than a handful of members of Congress with any background in science at all. And the Republican Congress has just abolished its own Office of Technology Assessment, the organization that gave them bipartisan, competent advice on science and technology. They say, we don't want to know. Don't tell us about science and technology.
Surprising.
Boy, that was Carl Sagan. Now, I don't know if the last point he made about some advisory committee, those are all politicized anyway, but his points are dead on. And I'm going to be talking with our next guest after the break, William M. Briggs, statistician to the stars, independent writer. He's got a Substack, William M. Briggs, which I highly recommend you check out. He's previously a professor at Cornell Medical School. He's a statistician. He's been a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. He's worked with the American Meteorological Society. He's a PhD mathematician. He's a philosopher, and he's the author of the book, co-author of the book, The Price of Panic: How the Tyranny of Experts Turned a Pandemic into a Catastrophe. William M. Briggs, when we come back on Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT, stay tuned.
TNT's Rick Munn.
The U.S. have provided assurances to prevent Julian Assange's appeal against extradition. So the death penalty will not be imposed, they said. But WikiLeaks founder's wife, Stella Assange, said he will not be afforded First Amendment protections. So last month, two judges deferred a decision on whether Assange, who is trying to avoid being prosecuted in the US on espionage charges, clearly relating to the publication of thousands of classified documents that they say endanger life, and so on and so forth. So bottom line is here, the US government have said, pinky promise, we won't put him to death when he gets there. Yeah, that's a little bit like if a crocodile could talk or a great white could talk and you're on a surfboard and you're thinking of going into the ocean for a little dip and he said, don't worry, I won't bite.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Today's News Talk Radio.
Come on, let the man talk.
We never censor our hosts.
Good. Now, talk.
Uncensored news.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, well, joining the program now, at least via phone, is Dr. William M. Briggs. He's a statistician to the stars, former professor at Cornell Medical School. He's been a meteorologist in the National Weather Service. He's done studies for the American Meteorological Society, PhD mathematician, and he's got a Substack, William M. Briggs. He's also the author, co-author of The Price of Panic, Why Tyranny of Experts Turned a Pandemic into a Catastrophe. Welcome back to the program, William. Would you like to go by Matt? William Matt Briggs.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay. Okay, I guess I'll call you
anything.
William Matt. All right. Well, thank you. I was going to start out our interview with playing a warning from the now deceased Carl Sagan. You probably heard this clip. It's about a minute long, and I just wanted to get your reaction to it. He said this. This is reported to be the last interview before his death with Charlie Rose on PBS. He's warning of a scientific arrogance and scientific dictatorship. So let's play this clip and we'll start and we'll get your reaction to that. So clip six, Carl Sagan, part two.
It's the danger of all this. I mean, you know, this is not the thing.
There's two kinds of dangers. One is what I just talked about, that we've arranged a society based on science and technology in which nobody understands anything about science and technology. And this combustible mixture of ignorance and power, sooner or later, is going to blow up in our faces. I mean, who is running the science and technology in a democracy if the people don't know anything about it? And the second reason that I'm worried about this is that science is more than a body of knowledge. It's a way of thinking, a way of skeptically interrogating the universe with a fine understanding of human fallibility. If we are not able to ask skeptical questions, to interrogate those who tell us that something is true, to be skeptical of those in authority, then we're up for grabs for the next charlatan, political or religious, who comes ambling along. It's a thing that Jefferson laid great stress on. It wasn't enough, he said, to enshrine some rights in a constitution or a bill of rights, the people had to be educated and they had to practice their skepticism and their education. Otherwise, we don't run the government. The government runs us.
All right, we're talking with William Briggs, statistician. Yeah, I assume you got to hear what Carl Sagan said. Is he all wet? Was his final warning before he met his untimely death completely off base? What's your reaction to that?
He's right. The government now controls us. He saw threats coming from a different quarter, you know, to be sure. Yeah. But his threat is just as right. I mean, now skeptically interrogating the world around us. No, that's out the window. The answers come from on high, and we find evidence to support the beliefs that we're told that we must have. That's the way science seems to work nowadays. So his warning was spot on. And of course, I don't think it was listened to because, like I say, he was looking for dissent from the wrong side of things. And so the people in charge never sought to look at their own fallibilities, their own mistakes, their own, you know, biases and all that kind of stuff. They just assumed that what they believed was true, and that was going to be an end of it.
Yeah, what's interesting about Carl Sagan is he was clearly on the other, you know, you want to think maybe he died in 1996, so you want to think maybe he could have changed his views, but he was clearly, even back in the early 80s when Al Gore had his Senate hearings, he had Carl Sagan as one of the witnesses. They used to call it the greenhouse effect. So he was, and again, I don't consider Carl Sagan an alarmist about climate change. If you go back and look at his old Senate testimony, he sounds very reasonable. He's concerned about rising CO2 and the potential in, but he wasn't like today's climate activist. But he says in there, you know, that we can't ask anything skeptically. And of course, you co-authored the book, The Price of Panic, How the Tyranny of Experts Turned a COVID Pandemic into a Catastrophe. How did we get there so quickly? Or were we already there in 1996? Were we at the point in 1996 where you couldn't ask any questions skeptically? I know in the case of climate, the media still reported sort of both sides back then. I mean, ABC News had a debate between Al Gore and Rush Limbaugh on the environment back in 1992. So we weren't all lost in 96. How did Carl Sagan foresee it? And were the forces already well underway since at least Eisenhower warned us about it in his farewell address? That would be 1961.
Yeah, we were kind of almost halfway. Say halfway if you want to say halfway. Remember back then, yeah. Bjorn Lomborg had his skeptical thesis about, the humans can influence the climate a little bit, but it's not going to be that bad. We'll be able to mitigate whatever comes our way. And Scientific American put out an entire issue against science answers Lomborg or something like this. And so science answers him. Like, the entire scientific community had to respond en masse to this heresy of this guy giving some, you know, it might be something out there, but it's not going to be that bad. Even that opinion wasn't allowed at that point. So they had already sort of moved into the idiotic position they have now, whereas if you don't agree with them, you're called a denier. So it wasn't in every single field. I mean, there were still some skepticism that you were allowed to have in medicine and, you know, in geology and in any kind of field that wasn't so political. But as time progressed and things, everything became subsumed into the political, it became more and more difficult to have a contrary opinion on anything and thrive in the system.
Well, you know, he talks about the ignorance of the public and how we could fall prey to charlatans. In your mind, does that sort of explain the rise of Anthony Fauci to the sort of the COVID dictator that we saw? Would he be classified as a charlatan in your book that followed the template that Carl Sagan warned about in 1996, where you couldn't question, if you questioned Anthony Fauci, you were questioning the science. He represented the science.
Yeah. Well, definitely. He was Fauci. I like to call him the fabulous Fauci. He would change his tune whenever it was the political persuasion on top of him would made to say. Everybody remembers in the early part of the, well, Before we even get to the COVID panic, he was highly involved with the AIDS panic. I remember back in when that was happening. I mean, he was saying, he was part of that crowd that's saying anybody can get AIDS. And it's absolutely, everybody is sort of equally at risk and we should all worry. And people are avoiding drinking in public water fountains and all this kind of a stuff. So he was always kind of one of these panickers. And that during the COVID panic, he was clearly one of these people, I'll say. You know, he came out originally at the very start of it when you probably remember Chuck Schumer and everything was saying, hey, come on down, let's go to Chinatown and have a meal and everything. Don't worry and everything like this, because the opposite political side had, you know, Trump had taken one position. So everybody felt that they had to take the opposite position of Trump, whatever it was. And so they were, you know, just asinine behavior on the part of politicians. And here's Fauci. He's on 60 Minutes telling the truth about masks. You know, you don't have to wear a mask. It might make you feel good, but it's not going to do anything. And then politics shifted and everybody had to change their opinion almost overnight. And so he changed his opinion and said, not only should you wear a mask, you got to wear double masks. And so, yeah, he was just blowing with the wind, trying to maintain his popularity, which he retains. Mistake after mistake he made, advice that he gave that was shoddy and terrible and so forth, but he's still winning awards. I just saw some, I can't remember the name of it, but just the other day, he won some new award. So it's all politics now. Very little.
Yeah, if you, in the Washington, D.C. area, the very liberal suburbs, you can still see the, you know, thank you, Dr. Fauci signs for getting us through COVID, you know, as best as possible. Well, the other thing Carl Sagan said, which is interesting, is about the ignorance of the public. Is the public more ignorant about scientific and technological matters than we've ever been? Or have we always been, in a way, ignorant about scientific matters?
Well, it's hard to say. It depends on the type of science and everything. You know, some of it's now so complex and so arcane that nobody could really. I mean, you ask a guy in the street what is a brain theory or string theory or something like this, and fundamental physics, and nobody's really going to know. But they are going to be asked to spend money, indirectly through government grants and the like. So, and it's really going to be difficult to get people to understand all of science at this point, because there's so much of it. But it's not so much that they have to understand the intricate nature of the theory and the mathematics and the physics and all this kind of a stuff, because when science comes down to saying, here's what is best to do, that's when we start to have the problem. And everybody can see the weaknesses in that. Science says the best thing you could do is panic, you know, during the COVID panic. The best thing you could do is absolutely panic, you know, run in a circle and run, make sure it's clockwise, and at 6 o'clock go outside and applaud. That level of stuff. And everybody can see, even if they don't understand the medicine behind it, the complex biochemical pathways of how viruses infect people and so forth, they can understand what they're being asked to do in the name of science is stupid or harmful or ridiculous. And so that level of awareness has increased. People have rightly become more skeptical because they can see that science is asking or things are being asked in the name of science. That's too much, even if they can't understand all the details of the theories behind it and so forth. So, and there, you know, people are, we can only go so far as that kind of a thing goes, but people should understand that science never tells you what's right to do or wrong. That's a form of science worship, psidolatry, or scientism. Science never tells you what's good or bad. It can't. It just tells you, you could ask a question about the world, and it could, at best, give you some uncertainty. If you say to science, if I do this, what will happen to this thing I'm interested in? And maybe science can give you a bound of uncertainty on that. But that's the best it can do. It can't tell you that it's best to do anything. And so that's a big problem we've had. And I think that's why people have understood more so the limitations of science.
Well, I'm confused. If any day of the week, if you put on like ABC's The View with Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar, they will invariably say, you know, we followed the science. You know, we followed the science on masks, on vaccine, on lockdowns, on school closures. And they're completely covered. Even all the local politicians, the school boards who made these decisions will say, well, what could we do? We were following the science. And that came from the top. It came from particularly the Biden White House, it came from Anthony Fauci, it came from the CDC. So what is following the science? When you hear, you know, our public health officials say we need to follow the science, and that's why this policy is a must, or we have to mandate it, you know, what does that mean? If you say science can't do it, what do they mean when they say we have to follow the science? And everyone follows suit and say, well, I'm following the science.
They're following politicians. They're following political actors. Whenever anybody says follow the science, what they're really meaning is follow me. That's all they mean. Do what I'm telling you going to do. And it's not necessarily that they're wrong, but when they're saying follow the science, that's wrong-headed. The philosophy is wrong. No one should ever follow the science. There is no the science. All right, because science, again, can't tell you what's right or wrong to do. It's just not equipped to do that. These things are always political decisions. We're going to have the entire country locked down or, you know, hide in fear or force people to get vaccines or be fired or something like this. None of these are scientific questions. And so when people are saying they're following the science, they're not. They're following what somebody said I think is right or wrong to do, and they're using science falsely. Or fallaciously, I should say, to justify their decisions.
Well, like particularly with vaccine mandates during COVID, that was about, I just saw an interview, George Clooney, the actor, and this is like 2021, maybe early 2022. He said, we absolutely have to have mandates for the vaccine because people will spread it. The same reason you can't allow people to drink and drive. Unvaccinated people are like drunk drivers in society. They're a harm to others. What's wrong with that logic? Why shouldn't we have had vaccine mandates?
Well, everybody should get their health advice from celebrities. There's no better source than actors and actresses and singers, sports stars. You should get every bit of medical advice that's best for your body from these people. After all, they know so much about the subject. I mean, how can you go wrong? So that's part of the problem we have right there, this celebrity adulation we have in this society. He doesn't know anything. The guy's an idiot. He's repeating and parroting a line. I mean that in a very scientific sense. He's right. parroting a line that he was told was important. And everybody around him says it's important, so he's got to get out there and make himself look important by repeating these nonsense phrases. Say, what? There was no possible way you could even convince him of. I think that what he was saying was the wrong thing to do, but he was doing it just as a matter of publicity and nothing more.
Well, then you have people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who literally said, screw your freedom, to anyone who opposed the COVID lockdowns. At least he was honest, and that's a simple message to get across. You don't, he didn't wrap that up in science. We can be grateful for that.
He managed to make himself governor for a while anyway.
Yeah, he ran, by the way, as a Milton Friedman libertarian, which didn't quite turn out that way when he actually governed.
We have to take a break. Idols with plays of feet, yeah.
Yes, the celebrity moment. I'm going to come back. I'm going to talk to you about the climate emergency. We're talking with statistician Dr. Matt Briggs, who has William M. Briggs on Substack. And his book, he's co-author of the book, The Price of Panic, How the Tyranny of Experts Turned a Pandemic into a Catastrophe, available on Amazon. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll be right back after these messages.
On the first article of impeachment, which charges Mayorkas with willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law, finding the charge unconstitutional. And there we go. So this DOA on arrival, pretty much as we expected, Timothy.
This is what makes me insane. The Democrats do with impunity what the Republicans will not scruple to do. This is exactly what I said Mitch McConnell needed to do with impeachment 1.0 in early 2020. Don't give it a hearing. Don't give it the time of day. Do not dignify it by holding a trial. It was garbage. This one is real. Mayorkas is clearly systemically not complying with the law. So Democrats get away with not having a trial for a legitimate impeachment, but Republicans hold a trial for an illegitimate impeachment. It makes me nuts.
State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
At the top of the hour, we'll keep on top of the news.
It's the most important thing we can do.
On today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We're talking with William M. Briggs, a statistician, also available on Substack, and co-author of the book, The Price of Panic, How the Tyranny of Experts Turned a Pandemic into a Catastrophe. All right, Matt, here's the issue right now. Joe Biden, according to Bloomberg News, is strongly considering issuing a national climate emergency. And with it, according to the Center for Biological Diversity, he would be granted 130 wartime powers by which to bypass democracy. Let me just play you the NBC News clip of what it means if Biden declares a national climate emergency. Clip four, NBC News.
Record heat and pounding rain down south, mudslides out west, wildfires coast to coast. President Biden, in the face of these disasters, now facing new pressure to declare climate change a national emergency. It's something Democrats have been hoping for a while, even before Congress passed that sweeping climate law last year.
We are in an emergency, and it is a worldwide emergency.
It didn't happen then, but activists hope it will now.
President Biden.
All right, Doc, we're talking with William M. Briggs. What's your reaction? Do we face a climate emergency? And should Joe Biden declare a national climate emergency?
No. I mean, politically, it may be the greatest thing for him. There's an election coming up, and he has to find some way to secure votes. Maybe this is what they're thinking is a good way to do it. There's no emergency whatsoever. There hasn't been an emergency. There is no reason to foresee there will be an emergency. It is all ridiculous. But just as we saw during the COVID panic, that doesn't mean they won't get away with it. It's very easy to panic people, but it's going to be more difficult with so-called climate change because, it's much smaller. People aren't really being hurt or dying or anything like that, and so it's very difficult for them to get away with it.
Well, let's say we did face a national climate emergency. Would Joe Biden declaring such an emergency help fight an alleged emergency if we faced one? In other words, do emergency powers really battle the problem? Did emergency powers help us fight COVID? Did emergency powers help us fight terrorism after 9/11?
It just made things worse. It made things worse after now we have the TSA everywhere. Yeah, that made things worse than COVID. There was one so-called solution creating more problems, which created more experts to look for more solutions to fix their earlier solutions. And it would be the same thing with climate. In any case, it's sort of a boon. It's you said it. It used to be called the greenhouse effect, and we used to call it global warming, and now they say climate change. And it's really a brilliant marketing propaganda move because everything is climate change. The word has right. The term has no fixed meaning. Anything can be squeezed into climate change. So they can always claim, if they claim an emergency, that the emergency will never be over. There will be no objective measure for them to say, we have finally solved this emergency. With COVID, at least, you could point to the number of people being classified as dying from COVID. But with this, there's nothing. I mean, it would be completely open-ended. It would be a perpetual emergency, which would never be solved, which is for politicians, that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I mean, we had Reuters news agency, the mainstream corporate Reuters, report 2 weeks ago that, and I'm not making this up, Indonesian transsexual prostitutes' income dropped severely due to climate change and the increase of storminess in Indonesia. How does a story like that make it past its editors? And could there be any way that our emissions of CO2 affect transgender sex workers in Indonesia?
Of course, absolutely no way that a little bit of CO2 is going to affect anybody's life like that. It's absurd. But maybe they just put it out for the comedic angle. But I had a contest. I ran a contest on my site, maybe a couple of months back. You go to scholar.google.com, which is where all the scientific paper repository is. It's like Google for scientific papers, scholar.google.com. And you type in anything you like at all, fish, Indonesian transsexuals, whatever, radio hosts. And then you put in the term climate change in quotes, and you will find at least one paper that some scientist out there has done to show how this climate change is going to negatively affect whatever it is that you can think of. So it's not an idiot panic, because a lot of these scientists are smart people, but they go at this with biases and everything and a desire to find evidence for their beliefs. And because they're smart people, they can find evidence for these beliefs, but they're very bad at finding evidence that proves them wrong. Or if they do find it, they keep their mouth shut about it so they don't pay any kind of political price. So it's just idiocy, idiotic behavior, I should say, on the part of pretty much everybody.
Yeah, you've talked about the science and you're a statistician. A Rhode Island professor has said he doesn't trust the data anymore because literally the data is racist. So my question is, how could data be racist? It makes no sense to me. And of course, NASA has come out and said that climate change is due to white supremacy. Is this science? Is this what science has become? How do you quantify numbers, statistics, if it's racist? And how does climate change caused by white supremacy?
Everything is racist. So why shouldn't climate change? Why shouldn't data be racist? This is another thing. Absolutely everything. One time I looked for this too. It's another thing I looked for. The only thing I could not find, this was like 5 years ago, everything was racist then. The only thing I could find that was not racist was French fries. And I think since that time, they have been declared racist too. So everything is racist. Everything is white supremacist. And if they have to have a boogeyman, it's going to be white people. You asked the question, is this what science has become? And the answer is yes. Science has become another branch of politics. And it's being treated as all political matters are. And so you have bad guys, and that's white people, white supremacy, racism, all this kind of a thing. And that could be blamed. They could blame the bad guys on everything for everything. And you can always find evidence for it. You can always push out theories. It's absolutely absurd. And this is why people, another reason why they don't understand the details of these papers and everything that are coming out, but they understand the idea is absurd. And it is absurd. So they're right to question these scientists.
All right, we have about a minute left. How do we get out of our current mess? Because it looks like now we're facing rule by emergency powers, whether it's going to be climate, COVID, we're still under 9/11. They seem to want crises in order to crush our freedom. We're not allowed to question anything. The UN claims they own the science. You can't even do Google searches or research now with anything skeptical or challenging coming up. How do we walk ourselves out of this? Is there a way out, or do we face much more tyranny before we find a way out?
I'm of the pessimistic mindset. I think we're going to face much more tyranny. I mean, you're doing a great job of bringing the word out and everything, but it's very easy to get people to buy into propaganda, to buy into panic, and they have they control all the money or the vast majority of it, and they have control of all the institutions, all the major ones. So I think we're in for a rough time.
All right. Well, thank you very much. On that negative note, that's been William M. Briggs, statistician. He's got a Substack, William M. Briggs, and he's co-author of the book, The Price of Panic, How the Tyranny of Experts Turned a Pandemic into a Catastrophe. Thank you for joining us today, Matt.
Thanks, Mark.
All right. And this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned. We'll see you next time.